Hi, and welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. I'm Chris, and this is Austin, and we're talking about the different roles in mob programming. And so I think the next one that we are going to pick up is the nose. And I know that Austin might favor this one a little bit. So Austin, why don't you tell us what you like about the nose and what the role is about?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this is definitely one of my favorites because I'm really passionate about technical excellence and making maintainable, extensible software that's easy to change, easy to understand, you know, easy to use and that kind of stuff. And so while my sense of smell may not be good in real life, but with code, for some reason, when we're mobbing together and we open up a file, the first thing I see is, you know, oh, long method, oh, shotgun surgery smell, you know, and those are the things that jump out to me right away. And that's basically what this role is about, is since technical excellence and having good code quality is really important to having a great product. You know, you take on this role when you, you know, call out, you know, something wrong in the code that could be refactored to be made better. So those are things that first jump out to me. Anything jumps out to you? I mean, is there, can you speak too much or at the wrong time? If you're like me and you just start, it's bothering you and you got to call it out. And
yeah. So I think there's a couple things that you need to pay attention to for the nose. One is, you're going to want to note things as you see them, but exactly what you said, you don't want to just jump in with like, oh, it's a long method right when the navigator's in the middle of, navigating even that long method. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, because we trust the red, green refactor process, the nose will watch while we're doing everything and look out for code smells and take note of them. And then once we're green again, then rattle off the different things that I think. So that would be my maybe ideal vision for the nose, is like, hey, we're working through this really hard problem. Let's make it work. And then once it's green, then make it right. And so,
exactly.
You know, the make it work, make it right, make it fast, the Kent Beck saying. And so I think a big piece of that is the nose is there and looking for code smells, right? And so, and then I think another great way, another thing to note, I think, about the nose is a great way to get practice for this role is by doing the Sparrow Ducks from Llewellyn Falco. So he talks a lot about showing instances of things and learning it by rote. And so looking at a lot of examples of short methods and long methods, you can actually get a good eye for it just by looking at the patterns in the code. And then using refactorings like extract method and things like that. So
for sure.
So it's spotting and noting the code smells. And then once we're green, suggesting the refactoring take place. I think that's what a good nose does. And the people that are in the driver and navigator role, you know, the roles that we covered last time maybe didn't really express what people can be doing in the moment besides maybe the active listening. This is one where somebody can be actively participating in the quality control process in the software that is not not explicitly driving or navigating or listening on the edge of the seat, right? And so I think this is a really important role.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on things that people can do to get better at this role, or maybe ideas around, you know, where you take it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, like you said, the Sparrow Decks is great. And then, you know, Martin Fowler's refactoring book is like kind of the go-to book for once you have the smells, how to get out of them. And actually he has a catalog on his website where you can do a checkbox of the smell and it'll give you an option of refactorings to do. So we've actually opened that up in the mob in some cases where it was like, I'm like, I don't know what to do about this. It just smells like a complex conditional. We have a lot of if else is going on. So we actually went to that website and we checked that box and it brought up a couple refactorings. And then we're like, all right, we'll try this guard clause thing. So we tried it out. And, you know, it's good to frame it always as an experiment, right?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to come across as like, oh, I know it all and this is the way to do it. It's like, I smell something. You know, smells aren't necessarily always a problem. It's just a reason to investigate, right? A reason to experiment and be like, let's try a refactoring and see how it goes. So in this example, we tried it out. We introduced a guard clause, and then we just asked around, like, is this better or worse? And then everyone's like, it is better. I can read this better, you know.
Nice.
And so, But then being not afraid to back it out, like, oh, that one didn't work, let's try another one, or so another thing I might add to that is you know, just feel out the personalities in your mob. So if it's a really open, really psychologically safe mob, you can maybe just call it out. Like recently we were mobbing and I was just like, I'm just gonna say it, we're not green yet, we're not ready to refactor, but we're basically making a shotgun surgery here where there's a lot of places the code doing the same thing. And so if we'd have to change it again, you'd have to change all those places in the code. And so I just kind of set it out and then we just kind of made a card, but we kept on our way. Other times when you're not so sure, you can just note them and then wait for the opportune moment when you know it's a good time to talk about it, you know.
Yeah. So how do you handle that when you're in an environment where you think that somebody might be offended by your suggested refactoring?
Yes, that is an extremely challenging question. And I've tried things, I don't know if they're the greatest, but basically just wait till, because I think if you are feeling that way, you probably don't want to do it in the moment when it's in the middle of problem solving, right? Because usually someone like that who might be offended by it, they'll be doubly offended or put off if it's like, look, we're trying to solve this problem and right now you're bringing up like this clean code thing, you know, that person may or may not care about, right? And so to wait till the problem is solved, and if you're doing TDD, hopefully you're in the green phase, and then you can say like, hey, look, there's these things called code smells. We're kind of smelling one right here. Here's a resource on it if you want more interest. Here's kind of the problems that can happen that are concerns that I have with the code if it continues and going in this current way. And luckily, when I've called this out before, we've previously experienced the pains of not fixing this. So we were changing code that had the shotgun surgery smell. And so we were changing one domain concept, but we had to go to like 10 different files and we were doing all these searches to make sure we didn't miss anything. And so luckily, hopefully, you've experienced pain with these mobbers before. Yeah. So you're like, remember yesterday when we had to change 10 different files? Let's not do that to our, you know, future generations who are going to maintain this code. And so those are the things that come to mind right away. I don't know. You have anything to add to that? Yeah.
So, I've been in newly formed mobs where people are unsure about each other. And some people were offended, some people weren't, about things like refactoring. And one thing that you can do, if you're stuck in a situation where you don't feel like you can voice these things, a big thing is intentional practice. So you know, carving out toy problems, doing practice around these things. You know, maybe it doesn't need to be your idea for the refactoring. Maybe you need to teach enough so that it's somebody else's idea for the refactoring, right?
Yeah.
And so if you can get to that point, you might be able to say, maybe take your top most common problem, like, oh, well, we have large files and large methods all over the place, and then just start circulating material about it. Okay. And then, so you can definitely do things like appeal to authority and things along those lines. And ultimately what you want to do is get out, level up your team to the point where they can actually, you know, so don't maybe necessarily say like, I have the idea and here we go. If that doesn't work for you or hasn't in the past, try doing it a different way and try and just raise the education level of the entire group and then have it be that, you know, two or three people suggest the refactoring and now it's not just you being challenging maybe the most senior person on the team or something like that.
Yeah. So. No, and I think that's really good advice. And I've actually seen a lot of success with that where this kind of gets more meta, you know, as far as, you know, coaching or helping grow an organization and help influence an organization, but it can lead to things like you can do lunch and learns and watch videos on these type of things. There's a lot of great videos. And I've also had a good experience because it might be more offensive to be changing someone's production code that's their baby, you know what I mean? And you're saying your baby smells, your baby doesn't look, your baby's not beautiful, right? Yeah. But like what you said, where you can do katas. And so I've done mob programming katas with people who were more adverse to clean code or this, you know, refactoring, that kind of stuff. And it's much easier to be like, hey, let's refactor this Roman numeral kata code that they don't care about at all. Because they're like, sure, I don't care. Whatever, this is.
We just made it in the last 20 minutes and it wasn't me by myself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's much safer place to be like, hey, we can convert Roman numerals to integers, but do you want to try out this refactoring or instead of having this huge long method we try, you know, we extract out into a bunch of them and how does that feel? You know, and it's the psychological safety increases when it's fake code instead of production code, right?
Yeah. You can learn to be candid with each other on a irrelevant problem, right?
Yeah.
And then when you're faced with it next time, then you can. So that went a little bit off the rails in the conversation, but that's what we're doing this for. And do you have anything else to say on the nose? That
I think that's it. The only thing to add is it doesn't have to be always a negative type thing, you know, where it's like calling out the problems, you know.
Yeah.
It's good to offer solutions as well.
Yeah.
You know, so not just the smells, but I have some options in mind, and here's one, a factoring a strategy pattern.
You could potentially lead with, you know, can we extract some, you know, can we do some refactoring, or I just want to extract a method here.
Yeah.
And because it's a little bit hard to read this, right? And so you can also, you know, some people do like the idea of listing code smells, and some people also don't like that, like they're put off by it. And so you might try framing it in different ways, like, oh, it's hard to read this, can we make it a little bit more readable? Or, this is too long, or something along those lines. And so you might end up with the same refactoring for both those statements, but one might feel more acceptable than the other. And so it's kind of a process of experimentation and seeing what people are okay with when doing these things. If you are in a situation where, you know, not everybody on the team is like, yay, refactoring.
Well, I think I'll add one more thing and then I'll move on. Sorry, I'm taking too long on this one. But what came to mind to me was something Chris Stead shared with me in this very topic was, instead of calling out a problem and then a more positive way to put it is be like, hey, we have this method here. Can you explain it to me? And then the person will explain it and be like, that is such great information. Let's capture that information in the code and extract this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's a great way to approach it.
And that way it just bypasses the negativity altogether. And it's just like, let's just capture knowledge in the code. And so, all right, ready for the next one?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. This is a new one.
This is the traffic cop. So the pull request hasn't been officially pulled from, pulled into the main code base for the mod programming RPG. But this is one that I had submitted because, you know, even when thinking about creating these episodes. And so the main idea for the process cop is just somebody that pays attention to the established and agreed upon processes within the team. And so Kanban is a really great one because, so in a pair or as an individual, it's really easy to have a Kanban board and then ignore it, right? And so one big thing to pay attention to is that now that you have four people you're working with in the team, you have this opportunity to have somebody be paying attention to some of the process and making sure that you're establishing and getting all the benefits of all those lean things that we're doing or anything else from working agreement that we do. So, so this role is somebody that says, hey, is there a card for this right now? Or, you know, I know that we made this our working agreement last week, and I see that we're doing this thing again, and does it make sense to go back to our working agreement, or should we just get rid of the working agreement because we're not feeling it right now? Those types of things can be really beneficial to the overall maybe flow of the team and even the safety around coming up with processes and things from retrospectives, right? And so the traffic cop is going to be the person that makes sure that when there are processes put in place that we follow them, and then we review whether or not those processes were useful to us by, you know, reading the room and saying, like, were people uncomfortable when I just said that we needed to go and hammer on our definition of done, right?
Yeah.
And so paying attention to the body language in the room is kind of part of this as well. And so that's kind of the heart of why I thought that this should be an individual role.
Definitely. And I think what I have to add is maybe just more of a story of how this worked out. And recent experience for me was, we had a team and we had several retrospectives on ways to improve the quality of the features we were completing and have less bugs. And what the team voted on the retrospective was to have a definition of done.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a kind of like a minimum spec of what that definition of done. So for every card we do, it's got to meet this checklist of things, you know. And so the team voted on that checklist. So it wasn't something that one person inflicted on the team. And but where the traffic cop comes into play is So we would complete a card, and it was always great to have someone on the team be like, "Look, we're signing off that this card is done or this feature is done, but did we go through the checklist?" You know what I mean? And so, it could have been quick or it could have been more detailed. So in this example, it was things like, does it have automated tests, unit tests, end-to-end tests? Did we think about security? Did we properly sanitize the data and things like that? And it was really cool because whenever the traffic cop did that, sometimes it would be like, "Oh yeah, we did all these things, we're good." And sometimes it was like, "Oh, we didn't think about security here." So then we go talk to somebody who knows more about security, and they'd be like, "Yeah, you need to make this change before you push this to prod." And be like, and so, or, "Hey, we did these tests, but we missed this end-to-end test, so we need to finish that up first." And so, that's that one story where it's tough to be the cop, right? You kind of feel like the bad
Gotta
guy, writing
sneak up
tickets.
and but if you look at it more of thinking about it from the perspective of like, hey, I'm being a safety net for the team, right? And just saying, it's very easy to just let your Kanban board fill up with tasks and then just randomly start pulling from the things that you think are most important, or stop updating the Kanban board at all, together. And I've seen groups of four or five people in a mob just forget to update things on the Kanban board. And so giving, conscious review of whether or not somebody's taking on this role from time to time can be really interesting. And I've even heard the idea thrown around of taking these roles and basically making sure that somebody had responsibility for these roles during the time, and then rotating those roles as time goes by to improve those skills, right? So this is one of those that I think could stand to benefit a lot from it, especially if you see things kind of slipping. If you ever come to a retrospective and the retrospective result is like, hey, we're not really doing Kanban anymore, then the traffic cop would be a great place to start with to try and just say, hey, this, one person in the rotation is going to be responsible for being the traffic cop, right?
And maybe one more tip, practical tip for this role is it might be bleeding into the archivist a little bit, so Chris will keep me off on course here. But if you have your working agreements and you're taking on the traffic cop role to help remind the team of them, to put them in a visual place, so if it is a definition of done, have that definition of done right next to wherever you move the cards to done, right? Or, maybe you have a good hook that spits out the definition of done at you before you push, or
Some way of getting that in front of you.
right. And so it's more of a visual cue, right, as opposed to needing one person to remember all the time. Or for us with mobbing with big screen monitors, we put our working agreements in between the two monitors, and so that when we retrospect, either a big retrospective or like one of the daily ones, we can look at them and be like, oh, are these good? Do we like how these are going, or should we take some of these down? And
And that's a big thing is like bringing up Chris Stead again, the one thing that he likes to say a lot is that you don't want to ask people to just be a better person, right? They're doing their best already, and so you want to find ways as collectively as a group to make it so that people are supported in the goals that they're doing. And so it's not saying, hey, remember, to update your Kanban board. It's, hey, did we update our Kanban board? Things like that will really be beneficial. And then automating or archiving those processes can be a really great way of doing that. And so those are definitely ways that those roles come into play. And we'll talk more about that when we get to them.
Right
All right, you
on.
want to move over to the researcher?
Sounds great.
All right. Here we go. You want to give us an intro to the researcher and what you feel is their main responsibility?
And so the thing that comes to mind for the researcher for me is someone who, and maybe I'll start with a story where we were solving a problem. We were in the red phase trying to go green, get the test to pass. And it was basically, in this situation, it was a three-person mob, and it was basically the driver and the navigator kind of going back and forth, like, try this line, try this thing, try this thing. And it was basically a lot of experimentation. And one of the mobbers went off to the side on their own laptop and started researching on their own. And then they came back into the mob conversation and said, go to line 10. We went to line 10, and that is exactly where the problem was, and we fixed it right then and there. And I think it maybe corrects like a maybe misunderstanding of mobbing, where maybe the driver and the watchers, you can't do anything but sit on your hands and just look at the screen, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's a role where you can research and look up things, you know, whether it's a public API for whatever third-party tool you're using to help speed up the work for everyone else participating in the mob. So
yeah, I think an important thing is that the researcher might even be looking a little bit farther down the road and saying, okay, the navigator is navigating this right now, and I know that we'll have to ingest this new API coming out very soon, and I'm not maybe directly contributing to the conversation right now, but what I can do is have a little set of example code ready to go, and when we get there, then we'll just be able to crank on it. And so I remember there was an Agile Open, and there was a new API, and there was basically a talk being facilitated where it was just people exploring that new API. And so people in the room, and we just said, well, we'll do a big mob. So this is the first mob that I'd seen of 20 people. And so Llewellyn was at his keyboard, you know, at the podium, and then taking input from the audience. And so we had, you know, 12, 13, 14 researchers out in the audience, and each looking at different parts of the API. And then when we got to each piece that we wanted to put into the code, we just popcorned around the room and saying, okay, this is the example of this, then this is the example of this. And, this is the... and so you can think of the researcher as a way to pipeline relevant information into the navigator.
Sure.
And so the moment when they're done with one thing, they can move on to the next and the next and the next. They're basically there to remove technical roadblocks before they become a problem. And that's a big piece where a lot of software development stops moving. And then there's this great analogy that I had heard of mob programming. Mob programming is not like you're in a like speed bike where you're gonna like fly off and blow up and die on the side of the road type of thing. It's instead like riding around in a steamroller. Like you're always moving forward and nothing is gonna get in your way.
Yeah.
And it might feel a little bit slower, but in fact you're actually making a lot more progress because you're in a lot less danger going forward. And so that steamroller analogy, I think a big part of it is this ability to have somebody go and reach out to the near future and get a roadblock out of the way.
Yeah, and it really prohibits that thrashing and context switching, which in a lot of software development processes leads to a lot of waste in the process where, oh, okay, we got this part done. Well, now I got to go talk to this person over here and then get this answer over here. And then that person's not available. They're in a meeting or, you know, or whatever the roadblock is. And so, thinking about it more as like a looking ahead. Mm-hmm. So I've seen the researcher role, like the example I gave where it was like the problem at hand, like someone doing a Google search and finding an answer. But looking ahead, I actually heard about a team in Europe, a mob team who did that, where they're working on, say, some front end code or some, let's just say JavaScript. I don't know what it was for real. But then they said, one or two person would pair off and they're like, I know a SQL query is coming up. And so they would start working on that query to at least get the basic information going so that when the driver navigator got to the point where he needed the SQL query, it was like they had it ready to go.
Yeah.
And so
that's a great way to just look forward in the near future and put that information together. Another one I think that I had seen was, you know, years ago we were working on a label printer and there was an API for the label printer. And so we were just getting scaffolding up for the program and getting things, you know, going. And I had a laptop off to the side, just researching the APIs for the printer. And so by the time the scaffolding was up, I had the first piece of code to actually print the like Hello World version of that label.
Yeah.
And then our iteration, you know, we compressed the amount of time it would have taken us to move forward significantly just because we had that information ready to go.
Nice.
And everything that was written up to that point was already kind of well suited for that stuff. So again, it's just the ability to jump out ahead of the team remove those roadblocks that you see them coming.
All right.
Yeah.
Right on.
Okay. So I think that's the last one for this episode. So, you know, please leave feedback for us in the comments and we'll see you next time.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
Have a good